And to talk some more Baylor football, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. Whenever we talk Baylor football, we love to talk to Craig Smoke, Sikkim 360 up there, covering the Bears like no one else. Smoke, how are you, bud?
Hey, guys, I'm doing pretty well, and just glad to be talking some football and having it right around the corner. Kind of nice, so good to be with you.
Sikkim 365, of course, the team reporter, and doing a great job there and doing the podcast and the host. Hey, so, Smoke, can I just say one thing to you folks in Waco first? Last Saturday was a big one. We took our daughter up to college at North Texas, took her back, got her into her apartment. The construction, I will report happily, is done. Right there near the stadium in downtown Waco, completely smooth sailing on a Saturday, right on up there. So props to Waco or the road service getting that done. It is an easy trip now through Waco, Texas.
Oh yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Yes, it's long overdue. It's something that's, if you've driven through that area of 35, I don't know that it's really ever been all that great, but yeah, we've finally seen that get widened, and when folks come down to McLean Stadium. The next time for a game, they should have smooth sailing, like you said. They expanded it, I think, four lanes, and they've had this constant just mess of construction all around campus and by McLean Stadium. But, yeah, it's a lot better now, and glad to hear that you had an easy time getting through Waco, because it has been quite the quite the pit stop for a lot of people over these last few months.
Yeah, the Waze app would take you around on that roundabout way to get around it, but yeah, yeah. It was a mess. I'll say this, too, for I-35. Like, once you get through Round Rock, where there's some construction there, as it's always growing in Round Rock, there's not any construction all the way. We were going to Fort Worth up to Denton. So the next time I saw construction was north of Fort Worth. Between Fort Worth and Denton is where the next construction. So it's pretty smooth sailing. They've done a nice job. It's taken a while, but it looks like it's finally all completed there from north of from Georgetown all the way into the DFW. Hey, Smoke, the football team, that's what we want to talk about. Baylor's really a good team. I mentioned the schedule is a challenge. What are the big discussion points for you guys are having for this Baylor team that are of concern in 2022?
Well, I think you mentioned one of them right off the top, and that was the schedule. I mean, the schedule definitely ramps up in a major way, and I don't think it's any coincidence that one of the first times we heard Dave Aranda speak ramp up in the preseason, he made, some very specific talking points about, weathering the storm on the road and being on the road and handling those types of games. And so it was definitely a focal point right from the jump in Aranda's message to the media and thus to the team. And, I mean, you said it. I mean, week number two, they're going to get the big test going to Provo to play BYU. 1 month into the season, they're in Ames, Iowa, first Big 12 game of the year. So, I mean, you expect them to beat Albany, but then you go to Provo. That'll tell you a lot right out of the gates. Very well could be 2-0 or 1-1. You play Texas State, which you feel good about that, but still you'll be 2-1, 3-0 going into Ames, Iowa. So, I mean, that first month of the season, 2-2, 4-0, depending on how you look at things and depending on how things swing. And then, 2 weeks after Ames, you've got the game in West Virginia on a Thursday night, no less. And we know that the Mountaineers fans are feeling a lot better. 2 weeks after that, you've got Joey McGuire out in Lubbock. And, they're going to want to make a statement there. I mean, and then you finally get a little bit of a break on the road then you go to Norman to play Oklahoma, who, we have no idea how they're going to look under Brent Venables. And then, yeah, 2 weeks after that, it's in Austin. And so it's just it's going to be a constant grind for them playing good teams on the road in, big pressure situations most likely. Obviously, the more they win, the more that pressure will ramp up. But, yeah, either way, there's not really much of a letdown on the schedule. So that'd be number one. I think number two, you mentioned the strength of the lines. But outside of the strength of that, I think if you swing over to the biggest weaknesses, quarterback, I don't think is a weakness with Blake Shapen now the starter. I think it is an improvement over Gary Bohannon, but there's still plenty of reasons to wonder. I mean, when people talk about Blake Shapen and what they saw last year, they're really talking about 2.5 games.
Right.
When you really break it down, because Gary was the starter for most of the year. Then he got hurt against Kansas State in the first half, and that's when Shapen took over. So he played basically the second half against Kansas State. He played the following week a full game against Texas Tech that they eked out towards the end in Waco that allowed them to go to the Big 12 title game, which he started and played in, but also got hurt in. And then we didn't see him after that. So he played basically 2.5 games as a starting quarterback. So there is concern about his durability just because we haven't seen him stand up a whole year or have to even do that. And when we have seen him for, you know, a 2-3 game stretch, he had to miss the Sugar Bowl because of injury. So I'd say that schedule, I'd say just the question marks around Blake Shapen and can he be the guy for a week in, week out entire schedule. And then the skill spots, I think, on both sides of the ball are not empty cabinets by any means, but they are, rooms with a lack of experience compared to what they've had. I mean, the back four in the secondary, they're going to be replacing both safety spots and both corner spots. Now, the good news is that technically one of the corner spots, you know, would be manned by somebody who's played a lot, and same thing for one of the safety spots. But they are going to be missing basically a whole room that's gone to the NFL. And then on the offensive side, they're going to be, you know, going into this season with a lack of proven skill guys at wide receiver and at running back. They're going to have to fill some big holes there thanks to Smith and Ebner and also Tyquan Thornton. So a long answer, but for a team that has a lot of answers, there are also some major question marks. Skill on both sides, schedule, and, you know, your quarterback's durability. So they are not a perfect team by any means.
It's funny. It's the opposite of what's down here, Smoke. I mean, we said it earlier, though, if you could combine the lines of scrimmage at Baylor with the skill at Texas, it might be Alabama on par with. I mean, right. It might be that good. Obviously, Texas still has some unproven at quarterback, but Bijan and Xavier Worthy and those kind of players on the skill side. Hey, which unit is better, the offensive or the defensive line? Because they're both really good. Which one is a stronger unit in your mind?
Oh, man, that's a great question. It's a great question for Baylor to have to answer and try to figure out. I feel like you could probably flip a coin and land on either side and be able to come up with a really strong answer. Both lines are commanded by great young assistant coaches. You've got on the offensive side, Eric Mateos, who is, I think, one of the bright rising stars in the game, came over from BYU with Jeff Grimes. And then you've got Coach Johnson over on the defensive line, who's done a tremendous job, Dennis Johnson, a guy that Aranda brought over with him as well from LSU. And they're both rising stars that I think we're going to continue to hear a lot about. But I'll go with the defensive line. I mean, the offensive line returns 4 or 5 starters. I do think they have a very strong 2-deep. And while they may not have the full array right out of the gate, so they might be missing one offensive lineman depth piece going in, they're going to be strong 2-deep wise. So you feel great about them. But I think that defensive line is really where my main focus is because of the fact that they could go 3-deep on the D-line with a 3-man front and really not skip too much of a beat. The entire 2-deep and a little bit beyond all returns to the lineup this year. Siaki Ika, the big man in the middle at the nose tackle spot, a true nose tackle. He was the addition last year from LSU that I think if you look at their run to the Big 12 Championship and the Sugar Bowl, he's certainly not solely responsible for because there were other great defensive players, but he was kind of that missing piece that locked it all together and clogged up that middle and was that big presence on the line that just eat up blocks and eat up guys that really allowed the Bernards and the Petries to fly around. So you've got him and everybody else on the 2-D, plus they add Jackson Player, a Waco native, played in Midway High School. They add him. He can play nose. He can play the end spots as well. So not only can they go 2-deep and beyond on the defensive line, but they can go 2-3 deep and not really skip a beat at nose tackle, which I think says a lot because you know that's not a position that just everybody can go to on their roster, much less be able to go 2 and 3 deep with solid proven guys. And that's one thing they can do this year. So I'll go D-line by just an edge, but they definitely are blessed to have those starting points going into this year.
And you mentioned Jackson Player. You know, we talked about Oklahoma State earlier in our countdown, and we had Sam Mays on, the former Oklahoma State offensive lineman, and he talked about Jackson Player, having seen him there at Tulsa. That's where he does the radio show. Jackson Player is a player. I mean, he's a really good player who was under-recruited coming out, but has grown and from a 3-star player to a really top-talented player the NFL is looking at. And that is the hardest position to find in college football, is big point-of-attack defensive lineman, that's for sure. Real quick, how about Connor Galvin in the O-line? How good is Connor Galvin at left tackle?
He's going to be a good one. You know, they had tremendous draft success this past year, had 6 guys go in the draft, which was a new record for the program. And I don't know that they'll have that amount this year because that was obviously a special group, but they will have some guys. And Connor Galvin will be one of those at the front of the line that is, someone you talk about and you think about when it comes to who could be the top pick, who could be a potential first rounder. That's not the main talking points with Connor. The main talking points are about this season, but that's kind of some of that exterior buzz is, yeah, he could be one of the next guys that is, you know, the big, you know, move to the NFL type of player. But for now, I mean, he's been a tried and true starter. He's been in action basically since he arrived on campus years ago, and he was a huge get at the time for the old staff. But, you know, again, Eric Mateos, just one of the best young offensive line coaches in the country. He's come in, he's helped polish the game with a lot of these guys and build up that depth. And, you know, this was an offensive line that, I mean, this took 3-4 years. Matt Rhule was constantly in the process of trying to build up the depth. When he first arrived on campus after taking the job, they had legitimately 6 scholarship offensive linemen throughout that very first spring with Matt Rhule. And one of the things that he said at the time was, hey, we're going to, you know, build this thing, and that goes for everywhere, but, you know, eventually this offensive line is going to get off the ground. Well, they went out and recruited really well. Aranda and staff came in, and they did the same thing. And through the course of action, they now, you know, have double digits as far as depth, closer to the 20 than to the 6 they had, you know, just 4 or 5 years ago. And so they've got a great group of depth players. They've got a great group of starting players, and Connor Galvin's the lead guy in that regard. I mean, he is the veteran. He is that left tackle that everything kind of revolves around, so to speak. And he's joined by 3 fellow starters from last year. So he's one of the first guys they trotted out. He's definitely going to be, I think, more of a vocal type of a upfront leader for them, and deservedly so given his experience. But he's somebody that a lot of guys listen to and respect. And I think he's going to be somebody that you hear a lot about this year, because he's definitely, like I said, kind of that guy up front for this Baylor football team. So one of the handful of veterans that they have coming back that, despite what they lost, you see him kind of stepping in to fill that void, and it's good to see that happen so quickly as he seems happy to be carrying that torch. So I'm very excited to see him. I know he's very excited about what they've got coming back, and that's why he himself decided to come back for another year. So huge return for this team, and I think it'll do wonders, but we will see once they – you know, actually go out there and roll out the football against some competition.
Always great, Smoke. Let you roll. I think our fans and our audience for sure has a better view of what Baylor is, strengths and weaknesses, and a tough schedule. Appreciate it, my friend. We'll check in again soon. And Baylor at number 7, our pick to win the Big 12, or at least be in that championship game once again. Thank you, Craig.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.